Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR Poker Pro Podcast Series, a poker how-to podcast series featuring the greatest and most accomplished poker players in the industry. My name is Annie Jennings. I am the host of the Poker Pro Podcast Series, and our pro today is Peter Alson, author of One of a Kind, The Rise and Fall of Stewie the Kid Unger, the world's greatest poker player, and author of another recently published book called Take Me to the River, A Wayward Perilous Journey to the World Series of Poker. I want to welcome Peter to the Poker Pro Podcast Series. Peter, hello there.
Hi, Annie. How are you?
Oh, fabulous. And we're so happy to have you today because guess what? We want to know.
Yes, that time of year
anything,
again.
Right?
It is that time of year again. The World Series is coming up.
Okay, we're going to talk about secrets to preparing and getting ready for and winning, right? We are going to win. All everybody on the line is going to win. The World Series of Poker, and Peter is an expert. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Peter because he has not only covered a previous event from the viewpoint of a journalist, but also that of a player. Peter played in the 2005 World Series of Poker, and that experience resulted in his wonderful book, and I recommend it to everyone. I read it in one sitting. I was there. I was there with you. Peter, I experienced your life, your feelings, your friendships, your ups, your downs. It was so good. This book is great.
Thank you.
It is called Take Me to the River, A Wayward and Perilous Journey to the World Series of Poker. I recommend everyone read it to start preparing and getting the feel of what it's going to be there. Now, last year, Jamie Gold won the gold, literally. And that is, he won the 2006 World Series of Poker. He faced off, now this is, of course, the No Limit Texas Hold'em, the main, I guess, the World Championship No Limit Texas Hold'em, the one that you see televised. I guess it's the most popular one from the viewpoint of the media, and you can comment on that momentarily, Peter. He faced a field of almost 9,000 players,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So we want to know from Peter today how to survive every step of the way. So as thousands flock to Las Vegas to follow their dream, and they want to play the most famous poker tournament in history, of course, they want to win the tournament, so we want to know everything about success, and Peter is the guy to tell us what it's like, what we should do, and give us an overview of the series. So, Peter, tell us. Start with some basics.
Well, basics are, first of all, if you've never played in the main event, there's really almost no way you can prepare yourself for what you're going to experience. It's kind of overwhelming. There are so many people now. I mean, even when it was smaller, it was kind of overwhelming because
mm-hmm.
suddenly you're there and you're seeing all the famous poker players that you've seen.
Oh, the poker superstars.
That's very intimidating if you've never seen them in the flesh. And suddenly now, you know, you may be seated at a table with one. Yeah, all you can do is tell yourself that it's not like being partnered with Tiger Woods and playing golf with Tiger Woods, in which, you know, golf is a game of, it's solely skill. And
right.
So you would have no chance. Poker, there is an undeniable element of luck, and that's the great equalizer.
We all know.
Right, and we certainly know that from having watched the World Series telecast.
Unbelievable, the things that happen.
Right, in which we mm-hmm. see, you know, horrendous beats, and we see the pros getting shot down by amateurs.
That's right.
You know, right and left. And of course, this is one of the reasons that the World Series has become the most popular sporting event in the world, because people do feel that they have a chance against the pros. That said, it's still an intimidating thing to be sitting across from Phil Ivey.
Oh, my.
And there really is, there's almost no way you can prepare yourself also for the sheer magnitude of, you walk into that room and it's, you know, there's
history.
Hundreds of poker tables and mm-hmm. thousands of poker players, and you feel like a flea. you know, it's that sense of like, oh my God, how could I ever possibly win this?
And what was I thinking? maybe Mildred was right in saying don't go, save the money for something else. You know, question for you. So there's going to be that moment of possibly regret, or that frightening moment where you're wondering, what have I done?
I mean, the difference between that and an online tournament, let's say, with you know, thousands of people in it, is that in an online tournament, you can't see those thousands of people. The only people you see are the people who are at your table.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing to keep in mind when you sit down at a table and you're surrounded by these hundreds of tables, is that you really have to just forget about all those other people and just concentrate on the people who are sitting.
So number one, concentrate on your table.
Right. That's the first thing.
Are you going to recommend, we see some of the pros, well, let's talk about the sunglasses, and let's talk about the paraphernalia. We see iPods,
right.
We see sunglasses, and we see earphones, those big headsets. What do you think?
Well, I have never used any of the above. I have a real problem with the sunglasses. I think that, in fact, they should be outlawed.
You think so? Outlawed?
Yeah, I really do. I think that this is a game where it's almost as if you were playing a football game and some players wore helmets and some didn't.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So the problem is not everyone can wear sunglasses. You know, I myself can't wear sunglasses even if I wanted to, because I can't see the cards with them.
Right.
You know, I don't have good night vision and mm-hmm. you know, and so for certainly for
you
for,
know, did you ever think of getting prescription glasses? I mean, they're a little expensive, but I mean, even for
prescription sunglasses. Even with prescription sunglasses, I can't
of the great lenses that they make.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. just it doesn't work for me.
Lights, et cetera, probably interfere.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I tried it once, and
mm-hmm.
after having, you know, trouble telling clubs from spades and making a mistake that way.
You're bringing up a really important point, because when you think about it, when you play online, which a lot of the players are going to win their seats, right? I've already heard 100 seats have been awarded by one of the major poker sites.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be an enormous number.
And there's a tournament coming up on one of the major sites where they're paying 100 seats is the prize.
Yeah.
So the first 100 people get their entry, to get their ticket.
Right.
You know, so that's amazing. So they are going to be showing up first time ever in, like, this type of casino environment. Now, when you're looking at the screen, it's right there. You can see it. You know, even if they have reading glasses, you can see it. Now, on a poker table, think about this. It's bigger. And you have to now see the middle of the table, right, to see the cards.
Right.
So you,
know, it's not, you know, it's not even so much the cards in the middle of the table that concern me. It's the cards in my own hand. Because remember, you're having to shield your cards from other players. So you know, you're just picking up the corner of the cards and cupping your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much darker there. And so if you're wearing sunglasses,
mm-hmm.
you can make mistakes. I've seen many players make mistakes that way. Sometimes it works.
You know, I understand what you're saying now with sunglasses. You're right, because you have that shielded environment when you're looking at your cards, and it must be difficult to quickly assess what you have.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that, you know, I mean, what some players do is they wear the sunglasses, they have them on top of their head.
Sure.
And then when they
have a good hand, they put them on.
Yeah, when they're going to play a hand,
it wouldn't be that stupid.
Well, but
once they
make their initial bet showing that they're entering the hand,
and then they put
now
them
they'll
on.
Put the sunglasses on, you know, and so the rest of the hand they can play without giving away. But you know, the thing is that you know, in terms of getting reads off of people or giving off tells without sunglasses, you know, a lot of people who play the game, they're afraid they're giving something away with their eyes, either by where they're looking or by their pupils dilating or whatever it is. I myself rarely pick up tells from people's eyes. Mostly the kind of tells that I see are physical tells. From,
mm-hmm.
you know, from their body, the way their hands are held, the way they make a bet, the way, you know, the way they're holding themselves, their posture at the table, stuff like that. And so, in a way, not having their eyes to look at lets you focus even more on their body tells. And I think, you know, it's actually much easier to cover up tells that your eyes give than you know, tells that you're giving off with your body. There are just so many different elements to be concerned with. And you know, I don't feel that for myself that I'm ever that my eyes are giving me away,
mm-hmm.
and I'm never worried about it.
Okay.
And so that's, you know, that's my take on it.
Question for you. In front of me, I have got the list. I got it from the WorldSeriesOfPoker.com, and it's a schedule.
Yes.
It's the 2007 38 years annual World Series of Poker. By the way, those of you who are listening to our series, I did see the Stewie Unger 1997 win, by the way. They played it outside. They had fans blowing.
It was crazy. They had to put plexiglass panels on top of the cars to hold them down.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? They said they got the plexiglass from who's the interviewer? Connor, welcome back, Connor.
Gabe Kaplan.
Gabe says that he brought the plexiglass from his mother's house in Florida to hold the cards down.
Is that right?
Isn't that amazing?
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, it's hysterical. I saw the end table. Stewie was amazing. I've got to talk to you about that last hand on our next teleseminar, our next podcast together, because it was amazing. And his interview afterwards,
yeah.
I really have to discuss that with you in terms of his overall life, because there's a lot to be said there and a lot to be learned by poker players everywhere. I'll tell you, I'll just refer to the book. It was one of a kind, or this is Peter's book, One of a Kind, The Rise and Fall of Stewie the Kid Unger, the World's Greatest Poker Player. And if you see his final game, 1997, they replayed it on TV. I actually saw it on TV.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about that end hand, him as a person, and his comments afterwards, because he gave some huge tips at the end and didn't even realize he was.
Okay.
All right, so there we go. We'll save that for later. Meanwhile, so there's a lot of events. How many events are there? About 50-something?
Yeah, you know, I actually don't know the exact number, but it's...
I think there might be 55.
It may be that many, yes.
Yeah, so there's 55, with the main event being the World's Championship No Limit Texas Hold'em event, and then 55.
Right.
That's the one that last year almost 9,000 players. And that's where one Jamie Gold won. Now, tell us a little bit about, though they offer bracelets in other tournaments, right? So there's other tournaments happening, and this whole thing is beginning on June 1st. So that's a good, you know, six or seven weeks.
Yeah, it's over 6 weeks, and they offer a bracelet in every event.
With much smaller buy-ins.
With much smaller buy-ins. I mean,
right.
The buy-ins are as low as $500 for the for the casino employees.
But for instance, event number 3, No Limit Hold'em, $1,500 buy-in.
Right.
So the field is going to be
15 is actually the lowest, except for the $1,000 rebuy tournaments. Mm-hmm. Those $1,000 rebuy tournaments are deceptive, though. I mean, if you were thinking to get in one of those tournaments on the cheap, you could only afford $1,000. You'd actually be better off putting your $1,500 down on a $1,500 event than
right, because they play like maniacs.
Yeah, you know, those events, you have to think of a rebuy event almost as you think of a cash game.
Yeah.
And so if you were to buy into a cash game where you only had $1,000 and everyone else there was sitting, you know, with $10,000 or $15,000, and they could rebuy every time they went broke, you'd
right.
be at a huge disadvantage.
A disadvantage, of course. Yeah. So event 55 is the big one, but that means there's 54 other events that take place prior to the start of the final event here, the main event, which starts Friday, July 6th, that poker lovers can play anything from No Limit Hold'em to, what do we got here? We got Pot Limit, we have Omaha High-Low Split, we have 7-card stud, high-low, 8 or better. There's just everything you could possibly want. So people can go onto the WorldSeriesOfPoker.com website, find the game they love that's got a much cheaper buy-in. Look at this one's got a $50,000 buy-in.
Well, that is the event that
holy moly.
That created the biggest sensation at last year's tournament.
Wow!
I mean, aside from the main event, but that $50,000 horse event, which mm-hmm. is, you know, Hold'em, Omaha, stud, high-low, and all the
variety, man. You got to know your stuff for that one.
And the idea with that is that the winner of that is really the best rounded player in the world, and it is, in a sense, the true world champion. And the people who are playing that event are only the top pros.
So there's not the field.
Last year, Chip Reese won, mm-hmm. which was very fitting because for the longest time, Chip Reese has been considered one, if not the best poker player in the world.
Now he is.
But he had never done. he never won the main event of the World Series, and in fact had never even made a particularly good showing. So it was nice to see Chip win that and get some of the recognition that he
deserves and earned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Question for you now about satellites, because some of these are hefty fees. You have 5,000 buy-in fees. Of course, the main event's 10,000. I know that there are some online sites where you can win entry into the main event. I've seen an entry into the No Limit Texas Hold'em main event number 55. Are there, and this is two questions for you. One is, do you know of any online satellites to win in entry into other, like Omaha, let's say, or some of the others? And how do you get into satellites in Las Vegas to win your way into some of these events? So tell us about the satellite climate in Las Vegas and anything you know about online.
Yeah, well, in Las Vegas, at the Rio, they hold satellites, single-table satellites, round the clock.
Now, and round the clock starting when? Like now? Could I go now, or just sort of a certain day? Or
they may be running some now. It wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that they certainly start running them a couple of days prior to.
Right. So, Peter, they're not on any schedule. This is why I'm talking about this to you, because you certainly mentioned it in your book that you even entered a few too.
Oh yeah. No.
So you went early.
I went a few days early, and I did play numerous satellites. I find those single table satellites to be very profitable.
Very easy to beat, sort of.
Yeah.
Well, you get your strategy.
Well,
you're a great player.
Oh well.
Yeah.
I try.
So the single table satellites land you into a bigger satellite, or land you right into the tournament?
No, the way the single table satellites work is, let's say you're playing a $500. They have, you know, big. I mean, they have single table satellites that go up to $1,000 buy-ins, and those $1,000 buy-in single tables are for a $10,000 seat. But they give you lammers, what they call lammers, which are redeemable at the cash cage. For tournament buy-ins.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to win $10,000 in lammers, you could use that either to buy into the main event, or you could use it to get
your money and run.
Well, you know, you can't directly get your money.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. They're not redeemable for cash at the but they're very easy to sell. They're negotiable.
Yes.
So you can sell them to other players. You know, so you stand. You know, prior to an event, you stand by the
mm-hmm.
cash window where people are going up to buy their way into the tournament, and you just sell them a lammer for face value. Should be able to sell for face value. You know, sometimes people have to discount them slightly.
Sure, sure, of course.
But you know, the buy-ins on those satellites are as low as. I don't want to misspeak here. I know you can buy you can get $175 buy into $175 satellite. And the first prize there would be three $500 lammers plus $250 in cash.
So you can put those lammers towards your entry fee if you wanted to.
Exactly.
So let's say somebody, you know, they're playing. We know that probably 10,000 people are going to want to play this the main event. You can go earlier. and you can play these satellites, these single table satellites, to help win contribution money or actual entry into the main event if you wanted to.
Right, and then additionally, they also have super satellites every day. And the super satellites are two different kinds. There are ones with a lower buy-in where fewer seats are awarded, and then they have $1,000 super satellites called megas, and for every 10 players who enter a mega, they give one seat. So that's a very good way to win mm-hmm. a seat.
Question for you. So let's say you want to play and you're prepared, you've got your money in your pocket or your backers, whatever.
Right.
Now, should you go in advance and try to satellite in, and is there a danger you can get shut out? That is, they say, sorry, we have 10,000 people, that's all we're allowed to take. I mean, what's the risk in not just signing up?
Well, you know, that 2 years ago when I played in the main event, I got a little spooked because there were all sorts of rumors flying around that in fact they were going to sell out, that they could only accommodate 6,600 players.
Right.
And so when I got out there, my original plan had been to play some satellites and try and win my way in, win the $10,000 entry fee. But when I got there, I decided that my case was a special case because I knew I was writing this book, and so if I didn't get into the main event, it was going to be a disaster. So I just decided to buy my way
in. Well, to say the least. Yeah. So can you get a refund if you go in and let's say you don't want to take any chances, because I have a feeling, I mean, there's capacity at these hotels.
Right.
So I have a question for you on that: is can you get your money back if you wind up satelliting in?
Only if you have a very good reason. You know,
such as you won entry.
Medical reason.
Oh, medical.
Family emergency.
So nothing.
The strategy is this,
and this is a dangerous strategy. No one knows if there's going to be a limit, okay, right, of the amount of people they're allowed to take, because it doesn't say there's a limit, but we're saying,
right.
So there could be a limit.
Yeah, conceivably you could get shut out, but, it's very unlikely, and you'll also know well in advance.
But so will everyone else. There'll be a rush to the, it's like the bank rush.
Well, theoretically that's true, but you still have to realize that people have to come up with $10,000 in cash. So
it's
people might want to play in it, but they still have to come up with that $10,000 in cash. I don't think it's a source of real concern.
Of real concern.
I don't think they're gonna sell out.
All right, and let's say you did register in advance. If you wound up winning your way, and you'd get your Lammer, let's say, that is also transferable.
Right.
So you can also sell it as well, and you may at full price.
Well, actually, for the megas
mm-hmm.
and for the super satellites, you don't get Lammers. You actually get an entry pass.
Uh huh. So is that transferable?
And that is not transferable.
All right. So it's important to find out about some of these rules about what's transferable and what's not transferable before you sign up. Are you recommending, or based on your experience, that let's say you want to play, you go out there, you want to sign up on the premises, or do they sign up in advance?
Well, you can do it. Via the mails, and that's certainly one way to do it. And that's how a lot of players who are coming from faraway places, do it. People coming from Europe and Asia and all over the world, and so that they will send a money order,
mm-hmm.
or do a bank wire transfer, or there are various ways that can be accomplished. I would say the majority of players, aside from people who won their seats online, and that's taken care of, but the people who are buying into the event just show up there,
mm-hmm.
And with the assumption that they're going to be able to buy in. I see no reason that that mm-hmm. anyone who wants to play won't be able to.
Can I ask you another question? Let's say the Omaha, the one that's, there's a good Omaha tournament for people who love that. That's coming up, I believe. It's early June. Can you go a few days before and win satellite into all these events?
Yes.
They have
super satellites. They have single table satellites for all of
every event.
Yes.
So if you want to play on Wednesday, June 20th, let's say that's that Pot Omaha, it's a $1,500 buy-in, mm-hmm. you can go, let's say, on the 17th of June and start playing satellites.
That's right.
That's amazing. It's
a very good way to do it, and certainly a good way to defray the cost of playing in these events. I mean, if you were to play in every single event this go round, it would cost you hundreds of thousands. You know, so.
Wow, what an amazing run you have, though.
Yeah.
And also, that brings me to practice sessions. So. Now you arrive, you want to play, starting to talk about a strategy of arriving a few days early to start playing the satellites to try to win your way in, so that will give you that brush up, that practice.
Right.
So do you feel that's the good way to sort of, you know, work some early, maybe Kirk kinks out, get used to playing, sort of get into your whole playing mode and persona?
Yeah, I think it's a really good way. I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of the kind of mental preparation that you need, and just getting used to the atmosphere of the place, it's an excellent way to get accustomed to it.
That's great. So you don't just want to arrive the day before. Yeah.
Yeah, to get a rhythm. Yeah, I mean, the idea of getting there, you know, the day before, the day of the event you're planning to play in, I think is silly. You'll mm-hmm. you know, and that's one other thing in terms of the kinds of things to look for in these events is when you sit down at a table and you know, I always find it helpful to get as much information out of the players before we actually start playing as I possibly can. So, you know, if you
do tell us, Peter.
Yeah, so if you strike up a conversation with uh-huh. the people around you at the table, one of the things to do is to find out how long they've been in town, how long they're planning to be in town, how many events they're planning to play, because that will give you some insight into how they're actually going to play the event. If you're sitting next to someone who's there for the entire 6 weeks and is going to play in every event, then you know that person is not going to particularly care whether they get knocked out of this event. They know that they're going to play other events, and so they may play much more aggressively than someone who's there. It's the only event they're going to play, and they don't want to get, you know, knocked out right away because that's it. They'll, you know, then they're going home, and their World Series is over. So that's a very good thing to know. And you can pretty much make the assumption that if it's the only event they're going to be playing, they're going to be playing a lot more cautiously, and wanting to safeguard their chips. And you can use that. So
that's interesting. That's good. Now we know that the games start every day at 12 noon, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now how long will each day's playing session be?
Well, it really depends. It's fluid. The first day of all these events, they play through a certain percentage of the field, and it can take, you know, they time these things pretty well. They have a fairly good idea of how long it's going to take, but it can take a long time, particularly the first day of the main event. When I played in it in 2005, we started at noon. And we did not bag up our chips mm-hmm. at the end of that first day until well past 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
So you know that's a very long day. That's a 14-hour day, and you're wired afterwards. I didn't manage to fall asleep until, you know,
Sure,
4:30.
And then you're up again to start the next day at noon.
And then you're up again to start. Well, actually, in the case of the first day of the World Series,
You're
not because they have, you know, mm-hmm. the multiple days.
Yes.
But still, it's, you know, in terms of preparation, again, you want to be in good physical shape. You want to be well rested, because you really don't have any idea how long, you know, you're going to have to be alert and stay focused, and you really need, you can't be out drinking the night before
right.
partying.
No drinking.
And then of course the other thing is, I find it very helpful to come with a little knapsack in which I keep things to help me along during the day.
Such as water, maybe high protein
water,
snacks,
yeah, nuts, raisins.
You know what works well for you, right?
Yeah, you just buy a little comfort pack.
A comfort pack. That's cute.
Yeah, it makes you feel as if you're a little bit better prepared than other people who just, you know, show up without.
Well, and you get hungry, thirsty, tired. All
That's
those
right.
things lead
yeah.
to very bad decisions.
That's right.
So
That's
you want to have your water available to you. You want to now. What about breaks? How can people make the most of the breaks that they're given?
Well, again, you know, the breaks are not long. You know, mostly people are making a mad dash to the bathrooms.
Sure.
And I think they've improved on that since I played in 2005 when it was a disaster. I mean, you really there was a race to the bathrooms and there weren't enough of them. And now they've installed, you know,
sure.
porta pans.
And the whole tournament's played in one location this year?
I believe so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Previous years they would move the final table to another hotel, right?
No, they just did that. Well, in 2005, it was the last year that they decided to do the final three tables at Binion's Horse.
At Binion's, yeah.
Right, and that was it. And last year it was all
in one place. Yeah. Do you suggest people, in terms of sightseeing some of the historical points of poker in Las Vegas, obviously, do you think Binion's is a place for people to check out?
I started going to Binion's back in 1988 and saw many World Series there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a particular fondness for the place, and it really is the historical roots of this event. And I think it's interesting. Anyone who's interested in the history of the World Series and wants to get a little bit of a sense of what it was like, should go and check it out. The thing is, it doesn't look exactly as it looked when the event was held there, and in fact the room where the World Series was held in recent years, which had originally been a bingo hall, has now, last I saw, had been turned into a nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what it once was, but it's good to go back and take a look at it.
Well, we're going to have another session with you where you can just give us the all we need to know about Binion's. Just as, you know,
yeah.
poker players, I think knowing the history and knowing some of the bios and the life stories of some of the major players would be really great, you know, for people to have an overall appreciation, right?
Absolutely.
The entire.
Yeah.
I love earlier that one of the first comments you made is that the World Series of Poker is becoming the most popular sports event in the world. Sports, hello, sports, right? You
yes,
see
I
a
did
change?
Say sports. I did
yeah.
say sports. Either, you know, there's an
I
ongoing,
love that you said
there's
that.
There's an ongoing debate over, you know, is it a sport, is it a game?
Well, look at the sponsors and you'll find out.
That's right.
The sponsors are pretty big.
Yeah.
And they're big players and big money's behind the sponsorship of the commercial time. So I think we're seeing this turning into a big sports event. But it'll be interesting to see how that aspect evolves.
You also have a lot of, interestingly, a lot of ex-athletes are going into poker. They're, you know,
sure, and why not?
Who was it? Rocco Media played poker. Yevgeny Kafelnikov, the Russian tennis player, has been playing poker. I think he's been playing professionally, actually.
You know, let me ask you now about etiquette then. Let's say, you know, you're on the floor and you see, I don't know, you see Doyle Brunson and all this. Can you ask for their autograph?
Sure, why not? You know, I mean,
sure,
you might get turned down, but why not? I just think that you know, on the day of an event, when they're playing in the event, both for their sake and for your sake, you probably wouldn't want to do that. For their sake, because they're trying to focus on what they're doing.
Yeah.
And for your sake, because you don't want to be putting yourself
tagged as an amateur.
Yeah, exactly.
And all, like, I don't know, I hang out with these guys all the time. I can get to Doyle's signature anytime I want.
That's
a napkin if I want. I'm going to have coffee later. You know, let's say there's annoying people around you, and what I mean by that is, you know, when you play poker, you really want to concentrate, of course.
Right.
But you've got Mr. Loudmouth at the end. You have somebody, chomping on a meal. I mean, what's going to happen? What kind of distractions are players going to face at their tables and the tables around them? Not only just the people and the noise and the comings and goings, but what about some immediate distractions that they're going to have to process out? You know,
it can be very tough. I think that one of the things that has been created by online play and also by the influx of very young players is kind of bad behavior and loudishness. Because there's really they don't have the, you know, they didn't come into the game the way I came into the game when I was a young player, where most of the players were older and they set the standard. And, you know, if I got out of line as a young player, they would, you know, pretty quickly put me back in my place. But, you know, now you have these kids who see, you know, the other young kids who are having success, and of course you have role models like Phil Helmuth and you know, players of his ilk who get a lot of television time, and so it kind of promotes bad behavior. And when you have somebody like that at your table, what these players learn is that kind of behavior can get under people's skin and can actually work to their advantage, put people on tilt. So it takes a lot of self-discipline and a sense of humor not to let it get to you. It's definitely very important. It's crucial not to let that kind of thing get to you. But that's part of the game. Part of the game is trying to figure out how to you know, work people, and there are all sorts of different strategies. You know, some people do it with charm, which is my preferred method. Some people do it just by sitting there, you know, like stones and not giving anything off of any kind. And other people do it by being obnoxious, and that's my least favorite way of gaining an edge. In the 2005 World Series, some people may remember, because he got a lot of airtime on ESPN, but there was this British so-called comedian who was very, very loud, but for the people who were watching on television, that's all they saw. Those of us up close also got to smell his aroma, which put a few people on tilt. He was, you know, he was of the European school of a bath once every month or so, and he was rank. And he was sitting, at the next table over, and it was like, I don't know if you remember that Seinfeld episode where there there's a car and the parking valet leaves his odor in it and they can't get rid of it. Well, that's what this guy was like. And I talked to the tournament director. I said, you know, you've got to make this guy go take a shower. They didn't, but he got knocked out not long after.
Wow. Well, it's going to be an exciting time for all, and we'd love to keep you posted. I will be there. I'm going to be broadcasting live from the World Series of Poker event from the Rio, and so everyone can be listening to the daily podcast that go up. We're going to be interviewing all the poker superstars. Peter, if you're there when I'm there, we've got to hunt each other down.
Absolutely.
Make sure I have your cell phone, et cetera, and we'll connect before. And people can get live, you know, daily reports, interviews from the players, sort of what was it like for them that day. And, you know, just in closing, Peter, you're playing the World Series. You got some, you know, you're under pressure. How do you handle the pressure in terms of what happens if you get, you know, one of those losses that sort of makes you feel like you probably never should have played the game in the first place?
Right. Well,
all that stuff. How do you come back?
If you're playing in the main event, the thing to remember is, especially at the beginning of the event, is that you have a lot of chips, the blinds are low, and you have a lot of time. And I think a lot of people, particularly those playing in it for the first time, get a little over anxious. They don't realize, you know, quite how much time they have, how patient they can be. You can literally, and you know, there are certain players who don't even show up for the first couple of hours because they know that feeling of being overexcited, and they don't want to let it get to them. And you're missing 2 hours, and you've lost, you know, a few chips off of your stack, but not that many. And the thing that you need to know is that by the end of the first day, if you've doubled your chip stack from 10,000 to 20,000, you're in very good shape for the next day. So that's not a lot to do in 14 hours of play. And I think, you know, a lot of players just get overly excited, and they wind up getting themselves short stacked for no good reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I think that's going to wrap for today. I really appreciate you sharing a lot of tips and what it's like down there for us. And you know, everyone's welcome to re-listen and glean some more wonderful tips. And I want to thank Peter Olson for being with us today. As you know, Peter is the author of One of a Kind, The Rise and Fall of Stewie the Kid Unger, the world's greatest poker player, and of course the author of his recent event at the his journey in his 2005 World Series of Poker. The name of the book is Take Me to the River, A Wayward and Perilous Journey to the World Series of Poker. And with that, everyone, good luck to you all. Peter, we'll have you back shortly.
Great. Thank you very much, Annie.
My pleasure.